The Guardian.
Before you get started with this edition of Football Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
Football Weekly Extra. Today on the pod, Gianni Infantino. Like Donald Trump, a president who came after a spent bladder and is enjoying a golden reign. What are his plans, though, for the World Cup? And will it destroy this much-cherished tournament? We'll have our say on that. That's not all. There's also Premier League, Man United against Liverpool and Watford Borough. There's foreign news, transfer talk, Payet, Chelsea's new stadium, and so much more in this Football Weekly Extra. Well, hey, back everybody. After Max Rushton filled in on Monday, once again, really disappointed by the number of people complaining about Max. Basically, there were none. I mean, look at this. Barton FC said, great podcast, a dose of Max Rushton's always good fun. Samuel Simmons, I am a fan. He always comes across as humorous, down to earth, really. Not sure what's going on there. Anyway, I, as you know, was in Zurich for some pretty important events.
For the best podcast award or something like that?
No, they didn't have a podcast category. There's no point, really. I mean,
there's a point because they throw an award ceremony for everything these days, don't they?
Well, I don't know about that. That's a slight exaggeration.
did you get to play?
I wasn't featured in the exciting FIFA Legends match, although somebody who looked quite like me did. Gianni Infantino himself.
So what were you actually doing?
I'm still not sure, Paul.
But I don't know at all, and like talking vaguely around it is not helping me.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I don't know how interested you are in this, but basically, FIFA, as a result of I believe Zvonimir Boban putting down the phone on France Football, have now been forced
spun off their own awards.
Well, yeah, as they had before, and then they merged for the Golden Ball business, and now they've got their own one again, which they've come up with a pretty exciting new name for, the best FIFA Football Awards. And Cristiano Ronaldo won. And I was there to just kind of be a kind of green carpet narrator, that kind of thing, and do a little bit of other stuff. And, yeah, as I say, still not sure. It was actually quite enjoyable. It was nice. And I waved at some people and, it was all good. And I got to see the German, where they got some pretty high-power names in to do the actual event itself, the awards ceremony, which was inside the Swiss television centre. And every bit as exciting as that sounds. They had Eva Longoria out of Desperate Housewives. And a German fellow called Marco Strehl, who confused and bemused many of the attendees by repeatedly inviting them to get it up for our next guest. And when he said that for Ronaldo coming on, there were red faces all around anyway. Also, they had some quite nice awards there. For example, Borussia Dortmund and Liverpool got a fan award for their marvellous and stirring rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone before their semi-final of the Europa League, which, of course, was, I think, the day before the anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster. And the Borussia Dortmund supporters there dedicating it to the victims, to the 96. Anyway, then I left town, and the next morning, FIFA went, phew, he's gone. We'll unveil our controversial plans for a World Cup featuring 48 teams. Jacob, some say that's not a good idea.
It's a lot of teams.
It is a lot of teams, but it's the same number of weeks. So let's see what goes up. The same 32 days, same number of games that the finalists will play, 7. The number of teams increases, the money increases. Does your interest increase? Does your sense of despair increase?
In that many matches?
Well, just in the whole tournament played like that.
I imagine it will become quite difficult to maintain an interest in watching that much football across a single day, and probably over however many weeks the World Cup lasts for.
Well, the same
certainly
amount
the group
of time.
Stage, but, I mean, it obviously happened with the Euros last summer, and I found my interest in that tournament waning as the group stage wore on.
Really?
Yeah. Because a lot of the matches became quite tedious, and there's a lack of jeopardy.
Is it because the European teams are actually the dull ones? I've seen this mentioned that if you're going to improve the World Cup, get rid of the not very good European teams because they're the ones who really stink the place out. The Bosnia Herzegovinas, the Switzerlands, the Serbias.
Well, given that one of the suggested sort of repackaging of the nations involves a massive
boost for CONCACAF sides.
Right.
Not, you know, which 75% of that federation are Caribbean islands. I suspect that you're not really going to have the quality elsewhere is not going to be particularly strong neither.
Right.
I'm personally into it. I think that there's a real problem with the potential last game of dead rubbers or of people kind of conspiring to, subconsciously conspiring to get the result that favours both teams because you can't schedule.
You can't have, if you've only got three games, you can't have a game simultaneously with it.
No, exactly. I think the sort of one good team playing against a small nation that parks the bus, which was very much the experience of Euro 2016 and did become very tiring by the end of the group stage, is inevitable if you want to grow a competition and have more stronger teams in the long run. And I think that this might be one of the better ways of organising it.
So they got to you as well, Paul?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm taking my typically contrarian stance here because everybody's against it. But I'm not. Particularly if it's the same length of time. I think, you know, you just pick and choose your matches a bit more.
Yeah. Right. I'd say the flip side to all the reservations about collusion, corruption in that third game, repeats of 1982 and all that, is you actually get to the knockout stages quicker. You know, we're getting rid of match day four, absolutely, the group stages.
Mm.
So in terms of losing that kind of sense of jeopardy, yeah, at least we're getting some knockout football sooner rather than later, which is fun. And to be honest, it's quite fair when you look at it, because before that only 15% of FIFA's members were actually represented in the World Cup.
Right.
Now it's only 23% in 10 years' time. That's all it's going up to.
Right.
So it's just, I would say, a shame that smaller nations that we've seen in the past who've hosted the World Cup, I know a lot of romantics were hoping that the centenary World Cup would be hosted in Uruguay, where the first one would be.
Mm.
It's kind of unfeasible for a place like Uruguay to host 48 teams, have 48 different training centres, and all the different stadia and that to go about it.
It is more likely you're going to get a series of alliances hosting allied countries grouping together to host the World Cup, which would presumably mean more smaller countries having a chance as part of a group of three.
Yeah,
but I think it's quite sweet. It's even beginning to discuss the logistics of a tournament that's going to happen
in 10 years' time.
Is it only 10 years' time?
Yeah.
All right, 10 years' time. But what are 10 years we could have ahead of us? Oof. If we have 10 years ahead.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, so, yeah, interesting. I was expecting a thorough condemnation of Infantino's bold plan, but quite the opposite here, quite the opposite. That's the World Cup, but in the rather more immediate future is the Premier League. So we'll talk about that after this.
This Guardian podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Premier League returning this weekend. Just before we started, I asked everyone to nominate which game they'd be most interested in talking about. I have to say nobody said Man United-Liverpool.
Oh, I think that was the assumption we'd all get to talk about it, Jimbo.
Or maybe you remember what happened when they met at Anfield.
The 0-0.
No one remembers what happened when they met Anfield.
Nothing happened.
Nothing happened at all.
Right. So, okay, Man United's record of late has been terrific. Was it 6 straight wins in the league?
Yeah, 9 in all competitions.
9 in all competitions. However, a lot of those opponents haven't been absolutely top draw. And when they have faced teams from the current top 6, they've only had 1 win in 5. Is Mu going to, with that in mind, shut up shop again this time, or is this a bold new United?
Well, that win against that 1 win in 5 was during this run against Tottenham, which actually I think sparked this run back in at the end of November or beginning of December. And that was the start of Mkhitaryan getting in the side, and he scored a brilliant goal that day. I think you can expect them to be a bit more expansive than they were in October when they went to Anfield and completely shut up shop.
Why? Just because they've hit form and he's found his team?
I think they've suddenly started to get a bit more of an understanding in attack. I think that if perhaps people like Rashford and Martial play, then they'll have more pace. When they went to Anfield, he bizarrely, out of nowhere, played Ashley Young, presumably because of his better defensive responsibility. And Marcus Rashford was shunted out to the right, almost playing as a right back, and I don't think that they'll be doing that at Old Trafford this time. At the same time, it is a Mourinho side. I don't think they're going to be going out all guns blazing, and I think you'll have to take into account, even though Liverpool lost to Southampton last night, that they when they get going, are extremely difficult to contain.
Right. Although they haven't really got going in the last two games, both of which have been goalless from Liverpool's point of view. The 1-0 defeat, which could have been much heavier away at Southampton, and against Plymouth Argyle in the FA Cup, although not their first team, which you'd expect to return for this. Mane out the picture because he's gone to Africa Cup of Nations, and Coutinho now very much available again. How do you feel about Liverpool? Are they in a good place as they head into this?
I think they're probably in their worst place of the season so far. But not that that necessarily tells you all that much about them at the moment. But I think we're going to see just how deep that squad is. Because I think you are getting to the point where, despite their absence of European competition, a lot of the players, particularly the attacking five or whatever, a lot has been demanded of them. And I'm not sure they're quite hitting the same levels of output performance that they were earlier in the season. I mean, I think it could go either way with United. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them shut up shop even at home. And just because of the psychological impact that, you know, stifling Liverpool would have.
But they need a win, don't they?
They do, but it's still 18 games left in the season after this. So there's a long way to go. Mourinho knows that.
So, if they win, though, Paul, they could go as high as third.
Yeah. They'd be right back in. But if they don't lose, then they've still got the chance to do that on another week. It could go either way, and obviously Liverpool are vulnerable at the back, vulnerable in the air in particular. So I think it's on. I think the interesting thing is about United and which way they choose to go in this game. But yeah, Liverpool, Daniel Sturridge, it's his time to shine. But will he?
Will he shine?
I think there's a lot of pressure on Liverpool going into this game. Not only because it's at Old Trafford, but you know, by the time this game is played, they'll know what Chelsea have done. And if Chelsea have widened that gap even further and Liverpool don't get a positive result or don't kind of stay on pace as they are at the moment, then, you know, we can already be saying, yeah, we could already be closing the title race debate again. Just because I do think Chelsea or Conte teams in general, once they're in front, they're very hard to actually keep pace with. So yeah, given this kind of lackluster run of form that Liverpool are on at the moment, at least in the last two games, you know, they really need to get a result against United.
Look, I mentioned Mane being absent and Coutinho coming back, but a lot of people are pointing to the absence of Henderson and Chan's inability to fill in adequately for him. Why does that make such a difference, Jacob?
Well, Henderson player who sets the tempo for them, but also think that Lucas played last night and was by all accounts not very good. I think probably he was the weaker link out of the two between him and Emre Can, who I think has played fairly well at times this season, but certainly they miss Henderson. He is their captain, isn't he, when he plays. So beyond anything else, it's the leadership he provides him in midfield, and he is such an important player for them.
Right, okay. What do you think? Is Mou going to go for it?
I think they'd be stupid. As you say, if they win, then they could go above level with Manchester City. They could go 2 points behind Liverpool. I don't think it's a game for them to just close down and go for a 0-0, especially at home. And with Liverpool vulnerable potentially at the back, and as Paul says, in the air, you think potentially could Marouane Fellaini be in the side after his goal the other night. But they've started to play well. They're clicking in attack and a lot of attacking options, probably more than Liverpool have at the moment.
I think whichever way it goes, it won't be as negative as it was at Anfield. But I can certainly see a world in which Mourinho thinks, well, you know, the first objective is to not concede, and then after that, we'll see.
All right. Well, that's coming up late on Sunday. As you mentioned, Chelsea playing on the Saturday, the late game on the Saturday. They're away at the King Power Stadium, home of the best a manager in the world. That's who they're going to be facing, Claudio Ranieri, the best football manager in the world.
He's only just getting started, is what he said.
Actually. Is that what he said?
Yeah, 65. So
damn.
No plans to retire.
He said, I'm crazy, as he picked up the specially designed... Does Vladimir Boban had a hand in designing that as well? He's a busy guy, is Vladimir Boban, these days. Yes, and it's a football on top of a platinum thing.
Yeah, it's quite small by award standards, I thought.
It's not small, it's just the awards got so big. Okay. That's the thing. Anyway, Chelsea are at Leicester. They, coming off that defeat against Spurs, when Chelsea got done last time by Arsenal, Conte came back with a radical new plan and blew everyone away. Will he unveil something new on you and the other spectators at the King Power this Saturday, do you think?
No, I don't think so. The Arsenal game was when they looked deep in crisis and they were playing four at the back, and this time they've hit upon a system with the 3-4-3 that works magnificently for them.
And but I think Spurs shown us.
Yeah, but Spurs are a good team, and they were Chelsea did beat Spurs a month ago before that game. Losing at Tottenham isn't a disgrace. City also did that in a similar kind of way.
Right.
Chelsea have a fairly poor record at White Hart Lane, actually, in the last couple of years, despite what had gone on before in the previous 20 before that. So, no, I don't think he's about to change that. When they lost to Arsenal, that was suddenly sparked all the talk that he was about to be sacked. Mm. You know, the bookies suddenly
came
so close, and then they went on a crazy winning run,
right,
and they're still 5 points clear. So you wouldn't think so.
Do you think he might change personnel? Do you think Nathan Aké might come into the side? Because just the one thing about that game was they stuck two crosses deep to the back post, and somebody got on top of Cesar Azpilicueta, and Ake's got a little bit more
defensive noose.
Or no, just a physical presence. He's a bit taller. Right.
Okay.
I don't know.
Good player. Yeah. He's done well.
Him returning from Bournemouth means Chelsea only have 37 players out on loan now.
You might as well not count them in that.
Might as well.
Zuma's back as well. Not from loan.
Right.
But did play what full 90 minutes in the FA Cup at the weekend. So he is like a new signing. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what Leicester do in this game, because against Everton in the FA Cup, they played three in midfield.
Right.
And Ndidi, their signing from Genk, was playing in front of the defence. Mm. And I have to say,
you undersold his surname there. Wilfred Ndidi.
Ndidi. rather than sort of a kind of extension of the kind of Puffy Coombs, P. Diddy.
Oh, yeah.
Ndidi. Yeah. So I think perhaps that was with a move towards this game, because I think it's become clear, it's been apparent for a long time, that without Kante, Leicester suffer playing two in midfield. And so having an extra body in there, particularly when you're going to play against a Chelsea side which will have two in midfield, one of whom will be Kante, you would want to have an extra man in there to help in that midfield battle.
Massive narrative klaxon at this point for Kante's return to the King Power. Ndidi coming in then for Leicester, but they're going to be without Mahrez and Slimani because of AFCON. That's huge.
But at least they have Ahmed Musa, because he scored twice against Everton last week.
Right.
So that he's suddenly come good after a fairly scratchy start.
Okay. It's the third time these two teams will meet this season. The previous results have gone as follows. 3-0 Chelsea at the Bridge, 4-2 to Chelsea at the King Power in the exciting EFL Cup. Right. Cesc Fabregas very much stamping his authority all over that particular encounter. Of course, Leicester did enjoy a brief return to their daring do of last season when they entertained Man City recently. Do you remember, Paul? It was quite...
Yeah.
Everyone got quite misty-eyed about it.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. What would you want me to say about that?
Well, I'm just wondering if there's any chance of them getting it up, as they would say in FIFA land.
They could well get it up, and it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think the main thing about Leicester this season is that Kante's loss aside, which has been the biggest change for them, they've struggled to repeat the same amount of energy and concentration. But it was a miracle that they managed to do it last year at all. So, the Man City game was a big game for them. Everybody got it up for that match. And so Chelsea, you would have thought that's the same sort of conditions. But my thing from watching Chelsea this season is just they get it up all the time.
Right.
They're constantly up.
In your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the competitive instinct is there, plain to see. So I'd back Chelsea in this one. I don't think they'll be wanting to. I don't think Conte would be particularly interested in having two defeats back to back, or even a draw.
That's not me, says Antonio Conte. All right,
Chelsea. In the meantime, we've got planning permission.
Yes. Hey. Thank you so much. And how many hours did you spend at Hammersmith and Fulham Town Hall?
4.5 hours last night, guys.
On Wednesday night?
Yeah, just chilling. Actually, literally chilling, because it was freezing.
Was it? So, okay, this was basically the announcement of planning permission for their new digs.
Yes, that's right.
You may previously recall that they tried to buy Battersea Power Station to do a stadium there.
Yes.
But their own fans' trust said no.
Well, it's an interesting thing. There is this thing which I will try not to talk about for too long, because it would get dull very quickly, but there's this thing called Chelsea Pitch Owners, which was sort of devolved out of the club in the 90s by Ken Bates, which allowed fans to buy the freehold, essentially.
Right. Is this something good that Ken Bates did?
It may not have been directly intended to be good.
Right.
It turned out to be pretty good.
Wow.
And then in 2011, Abramovich was like, I want to move. They were like, we're going to buy you out, guys, because we find this slightly inconveniencing that we have to, because as well as owning the freehold, they own the rights to the Chelsea name, and they're tied together, so that that according to the CPO's sort of manifesto,
right,
if you leave Stamford Bridge,
yep,
you can't be called Chelsea. And so they were trying to buy out the freehold so they could just move,
right,
but then there was a sort of big fan protest and it got shut down, and now, which forced them to basically look more seriously at rebuilding Stamford Bridge,
right,
which they have now, which, to be fair,
yep,
and it's not often I'm going to kind of, I feel sort of warm towards Abramovich, but they did then take that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
They got some of the best architects in the world involved. They created a solution which is both less impactful on the area,
oh, yeah,
at large, and a lot more attractive. I mean, when you look at Chelsea, and as you, if you're sitting in a planning meeting for 4 hours seeing these slides, Stamford Bridge is hella ugly, right? As it stands, you know, particularly the Chelsea village around it. And they're going to replace all this sort of ragtag and bobtail sort of buildings with one site which contains everything, and it's really elegant. It's apparently inspired by Westminster Abbey.
I thought you were going to say Westfield. I was going to get excited.
People come in through these brick piers, they're called, sort of pillars, and they go into the ground. It's like walking through the inside of a cathedral.
Ooh.
And it reminded me of the Alan Partridge, the special when he's back at home in Norwich and he's jogging through the cathedral on his hands free, kind of spitting ideas. I thought this is like that, but for everyone.
Wow.
Who likes Chelsea?
Yeah, I love the use of exposed bricks in a stadium structure. Mm.
Also to upgrade and refurbish their old football ground rather than move to a new one, I think is always a good thing.
Well, they're getting rid of all of it. Nothing that's being refurbished, but it's on the same site.
Yeah.
And it'll still be a purpose-built football stadium.
Yeah, that's okay, because Stamford Bridge has been a ludicrous ground in the past. This current one is a redeveloped ground as it stands.
Yeah.
It used to have the ridiculous running track.
And
parking grass, behind the goal.
Grass growing in the stands and everything. Yeah, parking in the goals.
Well, that's all really good news. And the one disappointing thing is that they won't be forced to get a new name, which would have, opened up all sorts of exciting possibilities.
But I think the downside is that in the 3 years of this happening, they might have to play at Wembley, which...
I think there was a stat now, something that Wembley could host 76 Premier League games in the next 4 years.
Really?
Like finally start paying back some of that mortgage then.
Twickenham is another solution that's been aired. Could they not mirror the American approach? Of course, the NFL has been using Wembley for 4 games a year from this coming season. Could they or Spurs not just go and play in America?
There's a really good stadium in East London as well they might like to use.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
really good stadium.
It's really good.
Are they going to keep the nightclub underneath the current Stamford Bridge, which is called Under the Bridge?
No nightclubs. They're going to have a bingo hall. It's going to be used for bingo and also for dances, but not nightclub. They were very clear on that. Dances, but not nightclub.
All right. Let's have a break, Jimbo, says producer Ben. So we'll do that, and then we'll be back with other things. Right, moving along in what is a pacey Football Weekly Extra. It might even introduce a new category, Football Weekly Express.
Oh, yeah.
This would be one. Let's take a Football Weekly Express look at rampant Tottenham Hotspur and their clash with West Brom. Spurs can beat Chelsea, but can they defeat their very own Baggies Hoodoo? Because I'm indebted to Johnny Blaine for pointing out that they've only had one win in their last 6 visits from West Brom. Did you know that, White Hart Lane? Who was it who signed up to talk about this? Was it you, James? Was it?
I didn't, but I'm quite happy to.
Paul, is this your bag?
I'm quite happy to talk about it as well. I've seen a bit of the Baggies of late.
All right. Go on. Tell us each your most interesting thing about this game. We'll see who wins.
I think West Brom are much, much better side than they were last season.
All right.
That is something that, I mean, you can see by looking at the table, looking at the form. But they have added a proper counter-attacking threat to the set-piece threat. and they're very, very, very difficult to break down, as we know.
Have they added Manolo Gabbiadini?
I think there's still some work to be done on agreeing a fee, but it's close.
Right.
I feel a bit sorry for Gabbiadini.
Why?
Let's be fair, because West Brom are a lot more attractive and easier to watch now than they were. I mean, Gabbiadini would be a very good signing for them, but it depends what they're signing him for. If they're going to be signing him to be a kind of backup for Rondon or to compete with Rondon, well, as we've seen at Napoli this season, centre forward is not his position. He likes to play out wide on the right. So they've already got good wingers there, Matty Phillips and Brunt in those positions. So yeah, he'd add a layer of quality, but I think in terms of the position that they were maybe looking to upgrade, it's I think it might not be ideal for him.
But I think James McLean is probably like Morrison and McLean are sort of like next down the winger list, and then McLean's mostly been coming on to play Sats fullback. So it might be that, you know, there would be genuine competition between the three if Gabbiadini was to come into as to who plays out wide, might drive each other on.
Psychologically, I'm just worried. Gabbiadini never struck me as the strongest of individuals, and how well he'll cope with the Pulis regime, I don't know. What was your interesting fact about this game, though, Jeff?
Well, just how Spurs have evolved since they last played West Ham.
West Brom.
Because they kind of, in October, they were blue and blue and blue, but couldn't blow the house down oftentimes because Harry Kane was out injured, and Vincent Janssen, as again we saw at the weekend, isn't really up to much. I think he's had more shots than any other striker in the Premier League without scoring. That's 33 now. But he won't be playing at the weekend. But as we've seen since Spurs played against United, they've now scored, two or more goals in each of the last five games. And playing this... the same system that they played against Watford and against Chelsea, they seem to be clicking in attack as well.
This Dele Alli explosion, because there is no other word for it, braces in his last three Premier League matches.
And he scored against them in October.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Mm.
Is that because his position has changed, or is it because, Kane's dropping deeper and thus he's getting more of a free role up front, or is it just he's just hit a very rich
I think he's
form?
Playing a little bit closer to goal as more of a second striker. I think he's really kind of found himself in that position, and he's just a really smart player, I think, Dele Alli. Probably the smartest of that group of England players who've come through over the last couple of years, just in terms of the positions he takes up, his spatial awareness, and his technical ability, which is extraordinary.
I think another thing to note is that this sort of uptick in form has come since the Champions League stopped.
Ooh.
And, you know, one of the really interesting things I think about Poch is he has a massive reputation for his training and conditioning of players. I remember Brad Friedel talking about when he came in, but he'd never seen anybody work a squad so intensely, but the players thrived on it. I think after last season, he will have plotted the season and the structure of it so that they didn't burn out towards the end of the
season. By getting knocked out of the Champions League,
that
kind of thing.
That's one way of looking at it. But I think, you know, they had to take on that extra workload, which they're not accustomed to at the beginning of the season. Now they're free of that. But there's a secondary question that I wonder about this that comes off of it. I thought the best player... the Chelsea game was, apart from the usual suspects, was Victor Wanyama.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I think he looked much more like a Poch player than he had done at the beginning of the season, where he had that physicality, but he was quite lumbering. He looked a lot more agile and adept. And I'm just wondering whether we think that if a similar effect could be had on Vincent Janssen, whether he might actually turn out to be the sort of player thereafter, or whether we just think he hasn't got it.
Hey, Jacob. You very patiently sat through that. Do you want to unload on us about Everton's clash with Man City now?
Unload?
Yeah, tell us about Everton.
Get it up for Everton.
Yeah,
Man
get
City.
It up for Everton Man City, because, Everton, they're beefing themselves up, aren't they? They brought in Schneiderlin, that's now been confirmed.
Yeah.
And I'm all right in thinking that could be a really tactically incredibly significant move, because that's a role that they really don't have anyone doing, isn't it?
No, well, they've had Gareth Barry doing it, but he's slowing down.
Right.
I think Schneiderlin is an excellent signing for a team like Everton. I think it was worth seeing whether he could cut it at Manchester United, but it's not quite happened for him.
Right.
I saw him a lot at Southampton. And
did he get a fair crack of the whip at Old Trafford, given the number of big players who didn't get a look in there and have now and done really well?
Maybe not. I don't think he necessarily took the opportunities when they came his way. It's difficult to think of too many impressive games that he had for Manchester United. I don't think that he particularly impressed, to be honest, but he has done so in the past in the Premier League. He was one of the best midfielders when he was at Southampton, box to box, superb, winning the ball back. And in the Opta stats at the end of the season, he was always leading the way when it came to interceptions and tackling. So for Everton, that will be a huge, huge signing, especially for Koeman, who has worked with him before. And his form under Koeman was why Manchester United then went and paid so much money for him.
They, anyway, are going to be hosting Man City, who have the best away form in the league. I don't know if Gabriel Jesus, when we're talking about January signings, who is now of Man City, the paperwork being pushed through as we speak, whether he's going to be available for that game. But then who knows whether Pep would want to include him. I mean, his plans seem to be so fluid, Guardiola. Do you think Everton are going to spring a bit of a surprise on Guardiola?
This was a great game in October. It was 1-1, and it didn't look in the first half in particular that Everton could cope with City, who played three at the back, very attacking formation. And then Everton made changes in the second half, which I think will have taught them a lot about how they can cause problems for City. They played a diamond in midfield, all of a sudden had matched them up in there, and the momentum changed in that game and they got in front. Now, of course, City had a couple of penalties which they missed in that game, and Stekelenburg had one of the best games probably of his career. But I think they'll have taken a lot from that game, which will serve them well when they play City on Sunday.
How well, though? That's the question. Jacob, did you see Man City's last away performance?
No.
At West Ham?
In my defence, I was asleep in Delhi. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Have you just been to India and that?
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Just hanging out, people hanging out, eating a lot of rice, giving them some visas and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So you missed it. Let me tell you that it didn't go well for West Ham.
Well, I woke up at, because I had my flight that morning. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning to check my phone and see how the lads got on. And it really set me up for the flight.
Right. Anyway, they are the side with the best away record in the league, although they will be without Fernandinho. Who so far...
So 20-game ban or something.
Something like that, yeah. So he's managed to get himself Easter off.
And City have been fined for flouting anti-doping rules.
Yes. For the third time.
In 12 months.
Yeah. In 12 months.
So that would include periods of both Pellegrini and Guardiola?
Yeah.
Supposedly this relates to them not keeping anti-doping authorities adequately informed about the whereabouts of players, and City put this down to a change in the training schedule, which just wasn't passed on. However, three times in 12 months, you'd have to say, you know, I'm sure Lady Bracknell would take a dim view of a track record like that. Anyway, they'll probably get a fine, is that right?
I think they have been fined, but they can appeal in January 19th, I think.
Okay, then.
Are we going to talk about West Ham Crystal Palace?
We will. Let's do it now. Go on then. You're all up on.
I mean, I think that's the next most interesting game. Perhaps
Why?
Even higher up.
Why?
Well, because today, this morning, Slaven Bilic, poor put upon Slaven Bilic in his porter cabin out in Dagenham, revealed that Dimitri Payet doesn't want to play for West Ham anymore. And he revealed it exclusively to the media. But obviously, West Ham fans will have known it since precisely the beginning of the season. Because he has largely stank the place out.
Oh, that's harsh.
I'd have to say, you can see it every time he's on the pitch. Yes, he's got the ability. Yes, he's created the chances, etc., etc. But he sets the tone for the entire team, and the team's dismal.
Yeah, the team is pretty dismal. But everything good that has, and there hasn't been much that has been about West Ham, has all more or less come from Payet this season.
But there's so much of the bad has come out because of him as well. I don't think it's because of him.
Because of him. It comes back directly to the failure to sign a striker, to a terrible transfer window, to the fact that they didn't sign a right back, which was clearly needed because Bilic thought that he could convert Mikel Antonio into a right back when he was the team's best right winger and scoring loads of goals from there. Instead, they've gone into most games in the first half of the season, probably going further into it, effectively playing without Premier League players in two positions, which then led to them having to move into a fairly experimental 3-4-3 formation, which isn't exactly up to the Chelsea standard or even the Tottenham standard. This is the consequence. If you have a player like Payet, you need to make signings to keep him happy. He's almost 30. He's only come to West Ham because Premier League clubs can pay more money than a team like Marseille, where he was previously, and they haven't kept their promises. If you go back to last May, David Sullivan said, whatever happens, we will sign a top striker. And they signed Jonathan Caleri, who's about to leave, Zaza. And to be fair to Zaza, the deal for him was structured so ludicrously that it effectively made it impossible for him in a new country to succeed. The fact that if he was to have made 14 Premier League appearances, they would have had to pay an extra £20 million for him to buy him permanently. Wow. Now, once you don't score in your first few games, well, why would you continue to play him? But it's not to say that he is a bad player. It's just he's in a new country. You can't tell either way. And the other players were Ashley Fletcher. You go on, they lose Carroll to injury, predictably. Diafra Sakho was already injured. He's injured again, having come back. They spent £20 million on Andre Ayew, who's not a striker, but they didn't need a winger. They bought Gökhan Töre, they bought Havard Norvite.
Yeah, but the fact that it was Dimitri Payet who was in charge of their transfer business, I think, really underlines your point.
I'm not stepping down from what I think about Dimitri Payet. I've watched him enough this season. His attitude on the pitch has been terrible. And it has affected the team in the levels and the way they play. There's no cohesion. And also, by all accounts, it's affected the training regime.
Well,
too.
Well, the good news is that it won't do any more because he's not going to be training with them anymore. Bilic said no.
That's what Dimitri. He says.
Where's he going to go?
Either Marseille, who want him back and think they could pay £35 million for him with their new owner.
Yeah.
Or I could easily see someone like Payet pitching up in China.
In China?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He'd be exactly the kind of player who a Chinese owner with more money than sense would.
Right.
I'll have some of that.
Yeah, because they have them over there.
Mm. Quite a lot. Yeah. Quite a lot of them. Yeah.
No, nowhere else.
When Inter were bought by the Chinese, by Suning in the summer, and it became quite clear that they could spend like they could in the old days, their former owner, Massimo Moratti, said, who would you like to buy? And he said, Dimitri Payet.
Really?
He said, Payet, yeah.
Interesting. But it would be interesting as well if he went back to Marseille from whence he came, because there's a little project going on there under the American auspices of Frank McCourt. And Rudy Garcia back in there. And things are beginning to gel after some absolutely horrendous matches in his first few games in charge. They've risen to sixth and are now, you know, they've got a big South Coast kind of Provençal derby with Monaco. Yeah. High-flying, goal-scoring Monaco this weekend. You know, just if you're interested in the French League and that.
And then the other half of this game is Crystal Palace.
Yeah, Crystal Palace.
Whom, you know, their last league game saw them get turned over at home by Swansea. And
do you know that's now three games and un point for Big Sam since he took over.
Yeah.
And of course, Paul, this is him taking on his old side.
Exactly. And two things I just want to quickly make about Sam is there is something that's not Sam-like about this. You look at the team and you think, actually, there's lots of players in there that could fit to a Sam template. He's got his Scott Dan, he's got Tompkins, he's got sort of reliable, redoubtable centre halves, Damien Delaney. He's got a big man up top in Benteke. But the word around this week is that he's willing to sell Benteke. And I think he likes Zaha, but I'm not sure he likes Townsend. He's more interested in playing Bakary Sakho. So I think he might have more problems with that squad than was anticipated. And secondly, the atmosphere of that Swansea game, it was this maybe his second home game, it was awful. It was really hostile. And they booed at half time when they were 1-0 down. And it was far worse than any game I saw under Pardew. Like even when they were on their, you know, 65 losing game streak or whatever it was. So, you know, Allardyce was never taken to the hearts of West Ham fans, partly because the style of football, partly because he's Northern. And I wonder whether the same thing's happening here as well.
Was it an anti-Northern thing, was it, Jacob? Also, are they going to boo him? And even if they do, will he be able to hear it, given how far away he'll be from the ground?
you certainly get quite a lot of room to yourself in the technical area at the lovely London Stadium. So maybe he won't hear it. Maybe he won't have to turn around and cock his ear like he did that time after the Hull game where they got booed even though they won. It is probably the style of football more than anything else, and his personality, I think, doesn't help. But I think Palace are going to win this game.
All right, I'm not done talking about it.
No, I think they'll
two
win.
Two words for you, Sammy Lee.
He's back, yeah.
He's back.
Palace have a really good record, well, at Upton Park, anyway.
Do they?
Yeah, but that doesn't exist anymore. So they're going to this terrible stadium where I expect them to pick up 3 points, because despite what West Ham managed to put together before Christmas and around Christmas, I don't think they played particularly well against either Hull or Burnley, and then they put four past Bob Bradley's Swansea, which isn't necessarily any kind of barometer of quality.
Right. Have you ever experienced massive buyer's regret over, you know, signing a lease on a property? Have you ever done that in your, you know, personal domestic accommodation?
No.
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you sign, and then literally having signed it, you walk in and think, oh, this, I made a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
And how long have I got here? Is there any way
they've
I can
got
get
around
back out of this?
Like 100 years there?
Yeah.
That's how long
it's
that
a long
is.
Time.
So that's quite long. Maybe it's, I don't know if Slaven Bilic can turn it around in that time. We'll have to see. He could be like one of those heads in Futurama where they exist in the glass balls. And
right.
So he could.
Well,
he could
actually,
try and turn it
you say that, but listening to the Guardian's science podcast, they had some, just for Christmas, a very interesting edition where they talked about reversing the effects of aging. And they had this British, I don't want to say expert, but, you know, a clever fellow on this, Aubrey de Grey, who claims boldly that the first person, he thinks the first person to live to 1,000 years of age
has already been born.
He's already alive.
Yeah.
Could be one of us in this room.
But he looks like Rasputin, doesn't he, Aubrey de Grey? He's got this beard that sort of trails to the floor, and you think, of all the people I might trust with predictions of longevity and living in the future, a man who looks like
he has been alive for 1,000 years.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Sleep under a tree,
that's
perhaps.
It, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was exciting news anyway. And it just puts things in a different perspective, you know, with regard to your 1,000 years at West Ham. 100, sorry.
Yeah. Well, also the sun will explode as well at some point.
But
the London
not,
Stadium won't be there. So that's all right.
Not if we put Aubrey de Grey on it. Just saying. Science, eh? Now, in the next part of this Football Weekly Express, remember, we've got more football and foreign football too. Norway news. This just in from our Norway department. Have you got a favourite Norwegian player, Paul?
Yeah, Egil Olstenstad.
Oh, it's a great name, isn't it? What did he do to...
He played up front for Saints for a few years, and he was a big man, but he had a bit... He was deceptively good on the ball as well. He had a bit of silk about him.
Deceptively good in the sense that it looked like he was being good, but he wasn't, or...?
No, it looked like he was the man you'd just sort of...
Lump
fight,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fight with, but he actually had a very good finish
and
little bit of skill on him.
Okay. What about you, Jacob?
Probably Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Okay, yeah, that'll do. James?
Probably stealing Macca's thunder here, but Tommy Svindal Larsen.
Great choice.
He was a championship manager legend.
Right.
Bohemian was good as well. There are a lot of good Norwegians in the 90s in the Premier League, and there's been a real lack, a real downturn.
The fall-off, if you like, of quality in Norwegian football is something that concerns the authority so much that they're actually bringing Football Weekly to try and talk a bit of sense into the good folk there. So if you are a football fan or a fan of just random chat from people on stages that may relate to football, and you are in Norway, then do get yourself along to the Rockefeller Music Hall. How about that?
Yeah.
The Rockefeller Music Hall on the 1st of February, because I'm going to be there. James, you want to be there as well?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Along with producer Ben and Barry and a legend of local broadcasting. Do you know who it is?
It's got to be Macca.
It's got to be Macca, yeah. Absolutely. He is, you know, the Jim White of Norwegian TV. Isn't that right, Norwegian listeners?
Yeah. He's doing deadline day there, and then he's going to come across to Oslo to see us.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Is he not doing deadline day in Oslo?
He's doing it in Bergen, I think.
Okay. Oh, really?
Do it, yeah. He's got some great stories about his time in Bergen.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm sure he'll tell on that night.
Bingo. Tickets are on sale now. They're quite pricey, but apparently that's how they do things in Norway. But anyway, you can find out more details on the Football Weekly blog or just search for Football Weekly Oslo. Sir Degder. which I think I just said to see you there. Either that or producer Ben's played one of his jokes on me. Ooh, we haven't talked about Sunderland, Stoke, Burnley, Saints, Watford, Borough. there's more actually, because I was going to talk about new managers and you launched into that Dimitri Payet tirade. We got a new manager in the Premier League in the shape of Paul Clement.
Got two. You got Mario Marco Silva.
Oh yeah,
Silva
goodness,
as well.
Yeah. We've got two new managers in the Premier League in the shape, etc., and so on. So, which one do you want to talk about first? Is it this exciting-looking Swansea Arsenal game, which will see Paul Clement and Claude Makélélé try and
assistant manager?
Yeah, try and defeat Wizardry's Arsene Wenger.
Is he a wizard?
Well, you know,
right.
He's got a magic hat.
He's got a pretty interesting coat as well.
Well, Swansea until this season were Arsenal's bogey side, really. Mm-hmm. I think they had as good, if not the best record against Arsenal of any team since they'd been in the Premier League.
But then what happened?
Well, then Bob Bradley took charge, I think.
It's his first game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Against Arsenal.
Yeah.
How did it go?
They lost 3-2.
Right. Well, that's not too bad.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate for Swansea that they're losing, or likely to lose, Fernando
Llorente.
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting one. The version I heard of this story was that they'd be doing their usual thing of selling off the person who scored all their goals. They've done it countless times before. Michu, Bafetimbi Gomez, other people too. But they'd be receiving £33 million rated Michu Batshuayi in return.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he could be good for them. I mean, he by all accounts, you'll know more from his time at Marseille. But he scored in the FA Cup. He's a finisher, but it's just he will need time to adapt to his new surroundings.
Right.
And he hasn't adjusted to the Premier League full stop because he hasn't had enough games yet. And he'll also have to adjust to a new side. Just when, in my opinion, anyway, Llorente and Sigurdsson in particular were building up a bit of an understanding. So I think it's unfortunate. But then, you know, when you're in the relegation zone, you don't really get to pick and choose, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Arsenal also on the wrong side of a dotted line. They're in fifth place. Fifth.
Although, speaking of dotted lines, Olivier Giroud has put his name on one to extend his contract, as has Laurent Koscielny.
Right.
And Coquelin,
will Andrea Belotti shortly be inking some Arsenal paperwork?
Not this January.
Okay, that's for the summer, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite curious that the name that came out of this was Arsenal, because Torino did not name Arsenal when they were asked about this. They just said a club has bid this amount of money. But Belotti would be, I think, a fantastic signing for anyone, because he is the complete striker. Six goals with his right, six goals with the left, five with his head. I don't think obviously there are better strikers out there, but in terms of someone who's ambidextrous, can do a bit of everything, he's very, very good.
Great attitude as well, no?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has he scored a perfect hat-trick?
I don't think he has scored a perfect hat-trick. If he did, he did score one earlier in the season, but I'm not sure if it was perfect.
They're asking a lot of money.
Yeah, he's got a €100 million buyout clause in his contract, which was a bit of one-upmanship on crosstown rivals Juventus, who obviously signed Higuain for $94.5 million, because there was a time, not the start of the season, but particularly in the autumn going to the winter, where Belotti was really stealing Higuain's thunder.
Ah. Yeah.
And a lot of people very up on this kind of golden generation, which is coming through in Italy at the moment.
Very nice.
But I know this is at the liberty, but apparently Arsenal fans are trying to...
Oh, you're back on the game?
Yes.
Right,
sorry,
yeah.
I know this is Swansea's home game, but Arsenal fans are trying to crowdfund some money to get so they can do posters of... a big banner of Alexis and his dogs. Apparently, just to say, yeah, this is your home.
Right.
It's the best place for you and your dogs.
I've seen
sign
that.
A new deal.
I didn't understand at all what that was about. Mm. It just says... Good boy, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And there's Alexis and two dogs, his beloved dogs.
Yeah.
Wow, there's...
really moved you, hasn't it?
Yeah.
If that doesn't work, I don't know what will.
Hull, who just lost 2-0 in the EFL semi-final at Old Trafford, are taking on Bournemouth. What happened the last time these two teams faced each other?
Bournemouth won 6-1.
6-1.
Yeah.
Wow.
But Hull weren't bad on
Tuesday
night. They actually played quite well and held out for a while. And it was, well, they're not unlucky that Fellaini scored a second goal. But it was, let's say, a stroke of misfortune that they didn't hold on for 1-0, which might have given them more of a chance in the second leg. You would think 2-0 down in the second leg, they won't have a chance against Mourinho's Manchester United. But they did play well. and they created a few chances in the first half.
What's Marco Silva doing that's different? Because they had a win in the FA Cup before this, didn't they?
They've been playing well for a wee while, actually. They play good football, or they were playing good football under Phelan, but they create chances and not take them because they don't have the quality at the top end of the pitch.
West Ham, but they when they went there, that was just a game as an example where they created loads of chances, hit the post three or four times, shots cleared off the line, and then they gave away a stupid penalty near the end and lost 1-0. And they probably don't have a striker who's going to keep them up. But they do have some nifty players around in midfield areas. So,
Like Robert Snodgrass. He'd made noises.
It's very important they keep Snodgrass. I mean, I think West Ham are doing one of their sort of series of derisory bid moves.
£2 million for Snodgrass.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they've got Nias now as well, haven't they?
He's also shown he can change games from the bench.
And, Marco Silva.
Yeah, and if plan A isn't working, then he's got other ideas, which I think was a criticism of Phelan. And it was quite strange to watch Phelan in the Sky studio for this game, basically.
It was quite quick, wasn't it, to turn that a turnaround, yeah.
Yeah, having to watch someone else manage his team and then say what he was doing right and doing wrong, which, to be honest, he wasn't really able to say anything, which I think suggests Hull have already upgraded.
Interesting. Bournemouth are looking to upgrade after the, or at least redress the absence of Nathan Aké by getting John Terry on loan. Clever. Could that happen?
It's a clever move, I think.
Do you think he'll go for it?
Well, I don't know. I think Terry would be the potential roadblock on it.
Right.
Him, would he want to? But I suspect he might not.
Relaunched that you know, the Arsenal fellow. What's his name?
Wilshere. Yeah. I mean, he's playing. Not. He's. I mean, he's. There's lots of. I mean, there's other players in that team who are more eye catching than Wilshere, I think. But. I just think it would be a good. I think it would be exactly what he would fit in very well in that Bournemouth defence. It would be good for Terry and his. You know.
Is he
career.
Older than the manager?
They must be about the same age, though. Yeah.
Captain, leader. Cherry.
Toot toot. By the way, that is the sound of the Football Weekly Express moving on to another station. And producer Ben has just tooted because he's got to get on. He's got to get an actual train. Do you know why? He's going up to Blackpool. Can you guess why, Paul McInnes?
He is going to watch this Strictly Come Dancing live tour.
You're so close to being right. It's actually wrestling. It's some kind of British wrestling jamboree.
Yep.
And so in which case, listeners, for his sake and for yours, let's fly through one or two other things. You got Sunderland Stoke this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. You've got Burnley Saints.
Uh-huh.
Oh, more transfer disruption. Fonte won't play again for Southampton after handing in a transfer request. They looked good, though, didn't they, against Liverpool Wednesday night? Barton could be in for Burnley. They've got all sorts of injuries. Arfield, Boyd, Goodmanson and Flanagan all in doubt. So, yeah, just saying that could be interesting. And you've also got, and most especially, Watford against Middlesbrough. If it's anything like as good as Middlesbrough's last Premier League game, we'll be gouging our eyes out.
And guess who's going to that on Saturday?
Are you going to that?
Yeah,
Paul
that's
McInnes?
My game, yeah.
Take a spoon. Yeah. Don't know if you're going to be going to the Sanchez-Pizjuan this weekend, but that's where Sevilla are going to be taking on Real Madrid in what is surely the big game in the Liga. Top four battle there. Over in Italy, Torino, who you mentioned, presumably is still going to have him in Belotti. They're going to try and hang on to Belotti, are they? Do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the intention behind the buyout clause.
Right.
So that would be so prohibitive
that
no one would pay for it.
Well, they're going to be taking on Milan. Hmm. So that's a great game in Italy, but probably...
Well, they're playing Milan tonight in the Coppa Italia.
Is that this evening?
Yeah.
But then again, in the league this weekend?
I'm not entirely
They're
sure,
definitely playing in the league. So that's two.
Back to back, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. A bit of Fiorentina Juve.
Yeah, that should be a great game. Of course, a rivalry. But as Conte said, more for
the
them
rivalry.
Than for us.
Hmm.
Memories of Robbie Badshaw. And also in recent memory, that great game at the Frankie.
And Liam Brady.
Yeah, when Juventus... when Juventus lost for the first time in 18 years and they got a bit ahead of themselves. I think they were 2-0 up and Tevez, do you remember, was doing Batistuta's machine gun thing at the Fiorentina fans. And then Pepito Rossi scored a hat-trick. But a lot of things changed between now and then. Fiorentina having a bit of an indifferent season because of Paolo Sousa kind of ruining the lack of ambition of the club. But they've got Federico Bernardeschi, who's definitely the
the hottest, I would say, with Belotti, the hottest young talent in Italy this season on form. And Juve, yeah, Juve played well last night against Atalanta. Dybala was incredible. I mean, proper. I mean, they said Dybala a la Messi.
A la Messi. Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Producer Ben's left. He's gone to the station. All right, then. Well, we'll just
finish
up here.
Wrestling stops for no man.
Yeah.
Unless it's been prearranged as a sort of like dramatic break in the entertainment.
Perhaps. Yeah. Anyway, so that game's on. When's that on?
It's on BT Sport Sunday night.
After we round up all the goals and news from around Europe.
Yeah.
We'll be telling you perhaps what's happening with PSG now. They've got Julian Draxler in and their clash with Rennes and that big Marseille-Monaco game, which also I think going on Sunday night. And one thing we won't be doing is reviewing any German action because quite simply there isn't any. Mm. They're still on holiday enjoying the winter pause, which means a winter break.
I think Rafa's on holiday with them.
No, he'll be back.
No, yeah, but he's in a winter training camp at the moment.
Oh, did he go to Dortmund's training camp? Yeah. Well, he'll be telling us all about that. And perhaps you too, listener, on Sunday evening. Right now, though, train has arrived at its terminal destination.
Hopefully not the terminal from Walking Dead.
Yeah, hopefully not that one. Yeah. Although that was Terminus.
Terminus, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a disgusting television programme, The Walking Dead, isn't it?
Well, it kind of is. That's its raison d'etre.
I think it's immoral.
Okay.
And should be banned.
All right, Paul. Next time you're on, we'll have a full and frank chat about that. But for now, many, many thanks for your active participation in today's podcast. And you, James Horncastle. And you, Jacob Steinberg. Mm. And you, producer Ben. Enjoy the wrestling, and we'll see you on Monday.